Jonathan is currently a PhD candidate in public health at the University of Connecticut, where his research focuses on alcohol marketing strategies, marketing perceptions among vulnerable populations, and alcohol policy. He's previously worked at the Harvard School of Public Health Center for Global Tobacco Control, researching tobacco product manipulation and consumer perception of novel tobacco products, and he is the president-elect of the Connecticut Public Health Association.
Thank you. And I'd like to echo the last speaker statement. Thank you for all still being here. This is the last presentation of the day. Hopefully I can keep you awake. So I'm going to talk about how different individual characteristics can potentially affect perceptions of alcohol advertising. And this work was done in collaboration with Zeming Zwan from Boston University School of Public Health and Dr. Thomas Faber at the University of Connecticut School of Medicine. And I have no relationships to disclose. Now, alcohol marketing in the U.S. and actually most countries is currently self-regulated. So the alcohol companies create a marketing code, they implement the code, and they actually enforce their own code. For the most part, it doesn't work, but we'll just kind of bypass that at the moment. In the U.S., it's a little bit different than some other countries in that it's product-specific. So you have the U.S. Beer Institute has created a code specifically for beer and malt beverages. You have the Wine Institute creating a code for wine. And you have the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States creating a code for distilled spirits. But thankfully, we have some industry organizations to try to summarize this information for us, because all the codes really have the same basic elements. The differences are very, very slight. So we have a document called the Guiding Principles, created by the International Center for Alcohol Policies. Again, it's an industry-funded organization, which kind of summarizes everything that all the codes should include. What's interesting about them is that they specifically mention vulnerable populations. And they do this in a couple places. One is in the exposure guidelines. So here they say that communication should only be placed in media where 70% of the audience is above the legal purchase age. They also talk about it regarding content, saying that communication should avoid using themes or imagery that primarily appeal to minors, and as well as should not depict or be addressed to at-risk groups. Now, you can see some companies are very loose with these regulations. This is thankfully not a U.S. brand. This is a Brazilian brand, but it's literally a pregnant woman advertising what's supposed to be a non-alcoholic beer, but it's still a pregnant woman holding a beer. Now, in a previous study, what we tried to do is expand this definition of vulnerable. So we were looking at behavioral characteristics, and we showed that heavy alcohol use was associated with perceiving ads to be not only more appealing, but perceiving greater alcohol consumption in the ads, as well as likely perceiving that the alcohol consumption is considered responsible. But what we have now are really kind of things that we can easily measure. It's really easy to measure and kind of segment the population based on age and gender. It's somewhat easy to measure and segment the population based on behavior traits like alcohol use. What we're also interested in is seeing if psychological risk factors also impact our perceptions of advertising and whether we should classify them as vulnerable as well. So not only should we look at just using a lot of alcohol, but also are people are dependent on alcohol? Do they have dependent symptoms? What about sensation-seeking behaviors? We know that high sensation-seeking scores are associated with greater receptivity to alcohol marketing as well as increased alcohol consumption. Delinquency and alcohol have a very strong association with each other, very strong relationship, and they both may share the same underlying risk factors. And finally, alcohol expectancies are very strong predictors of drinking behaviors, and they may actually mediate the impact of alcohol marketing on alcohol consumption. So the purpose of this study was to determine if these individual vulnerability characteristics will influence perceptions of alcohol advertising. And again, we looked at ethanol dependence, sensation seeking, delinquency, and alcohol expectancies. We were able to recruit 326 students from two colleges in Connecticut. One was a large state in university, the other was a smaller community college. And during the process, after consent was obtained, each student answered kind of the standard demographic alcohol use questions, as well as the questions regarding psychosocial risk factors. Once that was completed, they viewed and rated five alcohol advertisements. There was four TV ads and one print ad. And they rated them using questions that were based on the 1997 U.S. Beer Institute Marketing and Advertising Code. Now, we use the 97 code for a couple reasons. One, these people were recruited in about 2005, so it is a kind of an older data set, and the ads were collected in 2002 and 2003. So this code was in effect for the industry when the ads were created and when the study was performed. These ads were not selected at random. They were selected specifically to represent various violations of the code. So this included portraying excessive alcohol consumption, portraying irresponsible alcohol consumption, using content that would primarily appeal to minors, as well as associating alcohol with success, whether it's physical success, sexual success, or social success. From this rating questionnaire, we took out four questions to use as our dependent variables. The first was, how appealing is this ad to you? Fairly straightforward. It was measured on a 5-point Likert scale. The next two were statements, where our participants had to state whether they agreed or disagreed with the statement. The first saying that this ad shows situations where people are drinking an alcoholic beverage excessively, as well as the converse, this ad shows situations where people are drinking alcohol responsibly. These were also answered on a 5-point Likert scale from strongly disagree to strongly agree. The last question we used was, how many drinks do you estimate this person, which was the main character in the ad, and there was a little picture of the main character next to the recording, is likely to consume in the situation shown in the ad? And here we literally asked how many drinks. So it could have been 0, 1, 2, 3. There was no actual maximum that people were limited to. We analyzed the data using random intercept-only hierarchical linear models. All the models controlled for age, gender, race, ethnicity, and past alcohol use. Now, some of the scales can actually be broken down into several subscales. So in addition to assessing those subscales just using standard p-values, we also assessed model fit using the Akiiki and the Bayesian information criteria. So here are participants. On average, they were 24 years old, although the range went from 18 to about 53. There were more women than men. But we had about an equal breakdown between whites and non-whites, although the non-white category had to be collapsed. There wasn't enough minority groups to kind of stand on their own. About 82% of participants were non-Hispanic, and we did have a disproportionately high number of people who were heavy alcohol users, who were in the audit risk categories 2 through 4. Now, when we put it all together, this is kind of our big model. Apologies that the numbers aren't showing up in the cells that I highlighted. But those who scored higher on the sensation-seeking scale had significantly greater perceived the ads to be significantly greater. And it's the same with alcohol expectancies. Those who scored higher on the alcohol expectancy scale found the ads to be had greater appeal. Those who scored higher on the delinquency scale perceived more excessive drinking in the ads, which was kind of interesting. And those who had more ethanol-dependent symptoms perceive the drinking in the ads to be more responsible. When we break down the expectancy subscales, there are 8 subscales. The coefficients for all the subscales are statistically significant, which doesn't tell us all that much. But the model fit indices kind of tell us a little bit more. And we focus, the best numbers come from the social and physical pleasure subscale, as well as the social expressiveness subscale. And these were actually had a better fit to the data compared to the entire score of the scale itself. We did the same thing with the ethanol-dependent subscale. Here there were 5 subscales. A little different type of information in that only 2 of the coefficients were now statistically significant, and which is backed up by the model fit indices. And these were impaired control and tolerance. So kind of the quick wrap-up of the results. So ad appeal is greatest among those exhibiting greater sensation-seeking behavior and having more alcohol expectancies, regardless of whether those expectancies are positive or negative. Delinquent behavior is associated with perceiving greater excessive drinking. This is kind of interesting, not what I was expecting at all. And I've got to kind of go into the literature a little more. I'm wondering if this is because they want it to be perceived as a delinquent behavior, and that's why they're making that connection. And then those with more ethanol-dependent symptoms are perceiving drinking in the ads to be more responsible. Now, this is despite that overall, between all the ads they showed, mean alcohol use is essentially binge drinking. It was more than 5 drinks for the main character. So they're seeing binge drinking as a normal, everyday behavior, at least more responsible than other people in the study. Now, for the expectancy subscales, again, all of them were associated with greater ad appeal. We kind of want to focus in on the social and physical pleasure as well as the social expressiveness subscales. Those seem to be the most important. They fit the data the best. And I don't think this is because these subscales are more related to alcohol use than the other subscales. I think this is just kind of a reflection of what is actually being shown in the ads. So a couple studies I've been a part of that have compared the content of advertising to a self-regulated code, one in the NCAA basketball tournaments, as well as in the FIFA World Cup tournament last year, show that there's a high percentage of these ads that show alcohol associated with physical and social success. So 40% in the NCAA tournament, that's actually increased to about 85% in last year's FIFA World Cup tournament. And if you look at the literature on alcohol ad content analysis, since the 1980s when it first started, these themes have been regularly there for the last 3.5 decades. They've been using these fairly consistently for a long time. So it's kind of somewhat expected that these are the scales to come out. With the ethanol dependency subscale, it's a little bit different. This is driven primarily by the impaired control and tolerance subscales. And I kind of think that they're reacting to two different depictions of alcohol use. One is the idea of excessive alcohol use and drunkenness. This would be your impaired control. They're seeing people drink a lot. They're seeing people do kind of crazy things. But on the opposite side, they're seeing people drink a lot, but they're also seeing people who are in control of their actions after drinking a lot. So they're not, people in the ads aren't slurring their speech. They're not walking into walls and anything around. They're still doing fairly fine motor control, and whatever they do, it's successful. They're not running into walls, for instance. So it's, and this would be our tolerance subscan. Now, while the psychological mechanism is somewhat interesting, really, our primary purpose, is the public health purpose, is to expand this definition of vulnerable populations and who should be protected from alcohol marketing. So I believe that these should include people who have high alcohol expectancies, people who do experience ethanol-dependent symptoms, and really those who have sensation-seeking behaviors should be included in this as well. The difficulty becomes is that these aren't obvious physical traits. These aren't demographics. These aren't behavioral characteristics. If I, looking out at the audience, I don't know, I couldn't place you on any of these scales just by looking at you. So protecting these populations requires substantial and very difficult changes in how alcohol ads are marketed and what content is used to associate the products. At the minimum is in the current marketing codes, which again are self-regulated, there needs to be some explicit protections for these populations that are defined on these psychological characteristics rather than physical or behavioral characteristics. And ideally what we would do is actually have the code change from a restrictive code what it is now. So now it says all the content that you can't put in there, but allows everything else that's not actually written down on paper, which is the thousands and hundreds of thousands of other ideas you can have, to a more permissive code, which says here's exactly what you can do and bans anything that's not written down on the paper. Now, there are limitations to this study. Again, ads were not selected at random. They were selected particularly because they contain violations of the Beer Institute code. Now, I'm not too concerned about this, primarily is because most of the ads out there actually violate the code. That's kind of the norm. In our NCAA study, about 75% of all the ads had at least one violation of the code. In our FIFA World Cup study, it was between 85 and 90% of the ads contained at least one violation. So it's not some exceptional circumstance that this is occurring. Now, it's completely legitimate to say that if there's an ad that follows the code, that the perceptions could be different, and that's kind of what we would want. that's ideal, and if these companies followed the letter of their regulations and kind of the intent of them, we probably wouldn't be in this, have these issues, and I probably would be out of a job. But I'm not too concerned that these aren't selected at random. Order effects could explain the results. The ads weren't shown randomly in a random order. They were shown in the same order. But there was no general trend in terms of the scores, like number of drinks perceived in the ads didn't slowly increase or decrease. Ad appeal didn't increase or decrease through the ads. So again, that's probably not biasing the results in any way. But we may be unable to generalize to other populations. I don't think that time is a factor. I don't think college students have changed all that much in the last 10 years. I think they're still drinking a lot. I don't think the content of the ads have changed all that much. Obviously, they've changed a little bit as the culture has changed in the last decade, but they're still using the same general themes that they used in the early 2000s. But I am concerned that in our participants, we did have a lot of heavy alcohol users, which wouldn't be applicable to a lot of other populations out there. So that's kind of my one concern about expanding our results to other populations. Thank you.